Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us this morning for this 11th day of October 2005, celebrating the Angels' victory. At least if the home team, the Braves, can't win, we can celebrate the old home team from Southern California beating the Yankees. Anyone who beats the Yankees, you know, you've got to be in favor of them at any rate, even though I do like a lot of the Yankees players. I don't know how you feel about baseball. We're welcome to talk about it this morning if you'd like. We have some phone numbers for you to call, 864-244-8177, 864-244-9904, and 864-201-6955. But while you're getting ready to make your way out the door or go to work, let's have a quick look at the weather.
Okay, Greenville's Baltimore 64 degrees, downtown 65, Anderson 66, Clemson 65. Today, cloudy, patchy drizzle with areas of fog this morning, highs in the lower 70s and north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here's a quote from Douglas MacArthur. You are remembered for the rules you break.
Ooh. Okay. Well, we have some Harriet Myers stuff to talk about first thing this morning. This is a article I pulled off of the Cato Institute website. Cato Institute is a libertarian think tank, more or less, in Washington. Do some good work. And this is by Randy Barnett, who's a Cato senior fellow and a professor of law at Boston University. He wrote an article called Cronyism, because there has been some talk about George Bush, of course, nominating Harriet Myers because of nepotism, favoritism to relatives, in one sense or another. At any rate, Randy Barnett writes this about cronyism. During the Clinton administration impeachment imbroglio, Alexander Hamilton's definition of impeachable offense from Federalist No. 65 was plastered from one end of the media to the other. With the nomination of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court, get ready for another passage from Hamilton to get similar play, this one from Federalist No. 76. Here's what it says. To what purpose, then, require the cooperation of the Senate? I answer that the necessity of their concurrence would have a powerful, though in general a silent, operation. It would be an excellent check upon a spirit of favoritism from the president, and would tend greatly to prevent the appointment of unfit characters from state prejudice, from family connection, from personal attachment, that's italicized, because she is certainly a personal attachment to Bush, or from a view to popularity. He would be both ashamed and afraid to bring forward, for the most distinguished or the lucrative stations, candidates who had no other merit than that of coming from the same state to which he particularly belonged, or of being in some way or other personally allied to him, that's italicized too, or of being in some way or other personally allied to him, or of possessing the necessary insignificance and pliancy to render them the obsequious instruments of his pleasure. Man, you'd think Alexander Hamilton was a prophet talking about George Bush nominating this Harriet Myers. Can you believe it? Unreal. This is Alexander Hamilton. Not that I particularly like him above other founding fathers, by the way, but this quotation is very apropos. Here's what Randy Barnett has to say when he continues. Harriet Myers is not just the close confidant of the president in her capacity as his staff secretary and then as White House counsel. She also was George W. Bush's personal lawyer. Apart from nominating his brother or former business partner, it's hard to see how the president could have selected someone who fit Hamilton's description more closely. Imagine the reaction of Republicans if President Clinton had nominated Deputy White House Counsel Cheryl Mills, or who had ably represented him during his impeachment proceedings to the Supreme Court. How about Bernie Nussbaum? As the quote from Hamilton suggests, the core purpose of the Senate confirmation of a presidential nominee is to screen out the appointment of cronies, which Merriam-Webster defines as a close friend, especially of long standing. Cronyism is bad not only because it leads to less qualified judges, but also because we want a judiciary with independence from the executive branch. A longtime friend of the president who has served as his close personal and political advisor and confidant, no matter how fine a lawyer, can hardly be expected to sufficiently be independent, especially during the remaining term of her former boss. By characterizing this appointment as cronyism, I mean to cast no aspersions on Mrs. Myers. I imagine she is an intelligent and able lawyer. To hold down the spot of the White House counsel, she must be that and more. She must also be personally loyal to the president and an effective bureaucratic infighter, two attributes that are not at the top of the list of qualifications for the Supreme Court. To be qualified, a Supreme Court justice must have more than credentials. She must have a well-considered judicial philosophy by which is meant to internalize view of the Constitution and the role of justice that will guide her through the constitutional minefield that the Supreme Court must navigate. Nothing in Harriet Myers' professional background called her to develop considered views on the extent of congressional powers, the separation of powers, the role of judicial precedent, the importance of states in the federal system, or the need of judges to protect both the enumerated and unenumerated rights retained by the people. It is not enough simply to have private opinions on these complex matters, as a prospective justice needs to have wrestled with them in all their complexity before attaining the sort of judgment decision-making at the Supreme Court level requires, especially in the face of executive or congressional disagreements. Times like these, skipping towards the end of this article, demand a justice with a firm grasp on constitutional text, history, and principles, someone who can resist the severe pressure brought by Congress and by the executive branch and by state and local governments and also by fellow justices to exceed the Constitution's limits on government power. Does anything in her record suggest that Harriet Myers will be that sort of justice? We do not need to wait to the Senate hearings to answer this question. What hearings will tell us, however, is whether she or whether Senate, too, will succumb, in Hamilton's words, to a spirit of favoritism. That's a great article, and what a great piece of work that Randy Barnett has done for us in describing the situation with Harriet Myers. You may have a comment or a question about Harriet Myers. We'd be happy to hear from you. Once again, the phone number is 864-244-9904 or 864-244-8177. You can also try 864-201-6955 if those first two numbers don't work for you. And we'd be happy to talk with you about this Harriet Myers nomination. Just a quick ad while we're beginning. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month, although it won't be one. There won't be one this week, at the library on Malden Road between Old Stadium and Lawrence Road. Visitors are welcome. In Spartanburg, the business meeting is on Tuesday, and this month it'll be October 18th, third Tuesday of the month, and the meeting will be at the West Side branch of the Spartanburg County Library. To talk politics, join us for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground just off of Main Street in downtown Greenville. In Spartanburg, it's the first Tuesday of the month, and that's at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In at 6:30 p.m. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring constitutional limited government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. Okay, well, in the news, not a whole lot going on today. There's still people trying to, recover out in Pakistan and just scrambling for aid as the horrible, horrible quake went through the Afghanistan and Pakistan area there. It just has caused so much grief. The New York City subway alert has been scaled down. They decided that the whole thing was a hoax. There really was no plot by Al-Qaeda to blow up the subway. So that's been going on. We also find that conservative critics are now questioning Myers' abilities even more, as we read a little bit from Barnett here, And we have a few people really upset about nepotism. They're fearing that there's somehow, Hamilton feared, there was cronyism in the situation with, or there is cronyism in the situation with Harriet Myers trying to appoint her. And then we have President Bush spending the night in New Orleans to promote progress. Again, not a whole lot of exciting news on the mainstream headlines this morning. But that's okay. Really, when you figure that most of the stuff is just lies, at any rate, what's the point? You're going to get most of that stuff is going to be a slant and full of a bunch of nonsense from them. You know, at any rate, when you get to the mainline news services, they are just, as one person aptly put them recently, the media whores. They give in to whatever the party line is somewhere, and they don't always promote the truth, or only pieces of the truth that get promoted. Well, we want to promote for a moment tyrannyresponse.com. Tyrannyresponse.com is your one-stop shop to remember or note all the events going on in the upstate of South Carolina. There's a calendar right under the events tab. I hope you can go there and check it out. Right now, the site is down for some reason, I notice, and that's a rare event. I notice I'm getting a page cannot be displayed, but folks, that's not normally the case, and usually it's your reliable source for great information on the web regarding political happenings here in the upstate of South Carolina. Well, this weekend, of course, we have the Christian Exodus event going on. I'll be speaking there. I'm going to talk about private property rights and free market economics, because I think that's one area in which many people are still, sadly, even in the Christian Exodus movement, a little bit ignorant. They still they know that capitalism is the good thing to support, but they're really not clear as to why free markets are so important and private property rights. And hopefully this will give a little bit of a boost for that. If you're able to attend the meeting this Saturday, we hope you can. We'd like to fill up the meeting with the at least 125 people that are needed for break even. And right now I think there are just about 80 or 90 people who have registered. You can call 877-727-3578 to register there. That's 877-727-3578. Do so quickly if you can, so they can make reservations for your food choice. There's a couple entrees that'll be offered for lunch, and we want to make sure they have the right headcount there. It will be held at the Hilton Hotel off of Haywood and Pelham Road there in Greenville. Speakers will be covering a wide range of topics important to Christian Exodus. Panel discussion with CE members will also occur, and those are the ones who have moved to South Carolina in particular. There'll be a question and answer session with a panel of CE's leadership and demonstrations of CE's feasibility and likelihood of success. Some of the speakers include Mr. Michael Chapman, Dr. John Coben, Mr. Arthur Bringelson, and Corey R. Burnell, among others. There'll be at least a couple other speakers there as well. Once again, if you can attend the event for $40, 877-727-3578. Remember, that includes a hot-plated lunch, 877-727-3578. And we'll be glad to see you there at the Christian Exodus meeting this weekend. Okay, going back to some other news. Do you feel any safer? Fear as a blowback. This is by Dr. Teresa Whitehurst. Instead of taking a walk, Americans are running for cover. Commuters headed to work today under the watchful eyes of a police officer. Newly disclosed terror threat against New York City subway system raised the specter of an attack with explosives concealed by a baby stroller. Police with bomb-sniffing dogs interrupted a Rolling Stones show at the University of Virginia Thursday night after officials received a bomb threat concerning the stage. The Washington Monument was evacuated and the streets around it blocked off because of a bomb threat, a law enforcement official said on Friday. Those things all occurred on October the 7th. Do you remember the America that was, the good life we knew before the Bush administration? You could ride the New York subways without fear of anything more troublesome than getting off at the wrong stop. Well, it's going a little too far. I mean, there have been some muggings and so forth there, right? You always had to at least carry your 9mm under your coat or something, just in case. But at any rate, be that as it may, going to a Rolling Stones concert, never been, couldn't tell you, concert carried the risk of temporary deafness, but little else. And the only warning I ever heard about the Washington Monument in America's pre-Bush salad days was to avoid racing up the steps to the top, as this foolish feat had led to the occasional heart attack. But that was long ago and far, far away from the fearful nation we've become after five long years under the childish Bush administration. After years of divide-and-conquer strategies within an enemy making without, bomb threats are steadily increasing in frequencies. If this trend continues, a trend that needs that feeds into the Bush administration's fondness for military encroachment into pacification of civilian domains, the U.S. will soon be added to the list of volatile, divided, fearful countries, an object of pity and scorn. We're fast learning that leaders with a zest for military aggression eventually exact a price that their supporters as well as their opponents must pay, as Americans of every political party are learning the cost to their quality of life, freedom of movement, ease, confidence, feelings of safety and well-being far outweigh any benefits derived from tax cuts. To be a citizen in Bush's America is to be a frightened child of a bully father who creates dangerous enemies with vendettas while defending his offspring. The child citizen may at first feel protected, but eventually realizes that he or she has instead been protected to death, left alone to face the enemies created by his defender's antagonizing bravado and violence. And so we find ourselves having to face the backlash, protected by nothing more potent than impressive-looking security measures such as mind-numbing recordings, if you see something, say something, and report any suspicious behavior. Idiotic body searches of little old ladies, equally pointless searches of one-way ticket holders. The Bush administration send in the Marine strategy as if they're the mere sight of armed troops, which is anything in incitement to those already enraged with U.S. military violence, is sufficient to deter suicidally inclined terrorists. Startlingly ineffective random backpack searches. Educating the public about the need to stay kind of tense and vigilant every time we leave the house, but also to act naturally. A day without fear is a day without a submissive citizenry. Nowadays, we don't even expect to have a day without fear, in stark contrast to the elation that during our power of pride pro-war frenzies, America now think in terms of how much terror we should be feeling. Fear boosts ratings and distracts attention. Dramatic televised terror threats of varying color intensity will continue as long as they work. And indeed, George Bush is milking it for all it is worth. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
Question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9:00 a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Let me welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Just a quick announcement here for Stephen Yates. Dr. Yates, our good friend here at the Tyranny Response Network, has published a new book. It's called Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. And you can receive a copy of this book for only $18.99 if you're a member of the Constitution or Libertarian parties, plus $2 shipping and handling. If you're not a member of one of those parties, that's too bad, generally speaking. But you can still get the book. It's only $20.99. If you want to order a copy, make sure you make your party affiliation known with your order and send your check made out to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Yates at 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216. That's 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. And give yourself a treat by being able to read this great book, Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. Well, Paul Craig Roberts says that the police state is closer than you think. We already knew that, but he's advising us also even more that we need to beware of the encroachments of the state and of government in our area. Police states are easier to acquire than Americans appreciate. The hysterical aftermath of September 11th has put into place the main components of a police state. Habeas corpus is the greatest protection Americans have against a police state. Habeas corpus ensures that Americans can only be detained by law. They must be detained by law. They must be charged with offenses, given access to attorneys, and brought to trial. Habeas corpus prevents the despotic practice of picking up a person and holding him indefinitely. President Bush claims the power to set aside habeas corpus and to dispense with warrants for arrest and with procedures that guarantee court appearance and trial without undue delay. Today in the U.S., the executive branch claims the power to arrest a citizen on its own initiative and hold the citizen indefinitely. Thus, Americans who are no longer protected from arbitrary arrest and indefinite detention. These new seize and hold powers strip the accused of the protected aspects of law and give rein to selectivity and arbitrariness. No warrant is required for arrest, no charges have to be presented before a judge, and no case has to be put before a jury. As the police are unaccountable, whoever is selected for arrest is at the mercy of arbitrariness. The judiciary has, to some extent, defended habeas corpus against Bush's attack, but the protection of that principle offers against arbitrary seizure and detention has been breached. Whether courts can fully restore habeas corpus or whether it continues in the weakened form or passes by the wayside remains to be determined. Americans may be unaware of what it means to be stripped of the protection of habeas corpus, or they may think police authorities would never make a mistake or ever use their unbridled power against the innocent. Americans might think that the police state will only use its powers against terrorists or against enemy combatants. But terrorist is an elastic and legally undefined category. When the President of the United States declares, "You are with us or against us," the police may perceive a terrorist and a dissenter from the government's policies. Political opponents may be regarded as against us and thereby fall into the suspect category. Or a police officer may simply have his eye on another man's attractive wife or wish to settle some old score. An enemy combatant might simply be an American who happens to be in a foreign country when the U.S. invades. In times before our own, when people were properly educated, they understood the injustices that caused the English Parliament to pass the Habeas Corpus Act of 1679, prohibiting the arbitrary powers that are now being claimed for the executive branch of the United States. The Patriot Act has given the police autonomous surveillance powers. These powers were not achieved without opposition. Civil libertarians opposed it. Bob Barr, the former U.S. representative who led the impeachment of President Clinton, fought to limit some of the worst features of the act, but the act still bristles with unconstitutional violations of the rights of citizens, and the newly created powers of the government to spy on citizens has brought an end to privacy. The prohibition against self-incrimination protects the accused from being tortured into confession. The innocent are no longer immune to pain than the guilty. As Stalin's show trials demonstrated, even the most committed leaders of the Bolshevik Revolution could be tortured into confessing to be counter-revolutionaries. The prohibition against torture has been breached by the practice of plea bargaining, which replaces jury trials with negotiated self-incrimination, and by sentencing guidelines, which transfer sentencing discretion from judge to prosecutor. Plea bargaining is a form of psychological torture in which innocent and guilty alike give up the right to jury trial in order to reduce the number and severity of the charges that the prosecutor brings. The prohibition against physical torture, however, held in the U.S. invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, as video, photographic, and testimonial evidence make clear, the U.S. military has been torturing large numbers of people in its Iraq prisons and its prison compound at Guantanamo, Cuba. Most of the detainees were people picked up in the equivalent of KGB Stalin-era street sweeps. Having no idea who the detainees are and pressured into producing results, torture was applied to coerce confessions. Everyone is disturbed about this barbaric and illegal practice except the Bush administration. In an amendment to the $440 billion defense budget bill last Wednesday, the U.S. Senate voted 90-9 to ban cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment or punishment of anyone in the U.S. government custody. President Bush responded to the Senate's will by repeating his earlier threat to veto the bill. "Allow me to torture," demands Bush of the Senate, "or you will be guilty of delaying the military's budget during wartime." Bush is threatening a Senate with a blame for the deaths of U.S. soldiers who will die because they don't get their body armor or Humvee armor in time. It will be a short step from torturing detainees abroad to torturing the accused in U.S. jails and prisons. The attorney-client privilege, the greater achievement, has been breached by the Lynn Stewart case. And we're going to stop there for just a moment. We need to take a phone call. And we'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning, Dr. Coben. It's Paul.
Hey, Paul. Good to have you on the show again today.
Yes, how are you doing?
Okay, thanks. How about you?
I'm enjoying another great show.
Good. Isn't this an exciting talk from Paul Craig Roberts? I'll tell you, between him and the Randy Barnett's cronyism article, I think we've had a bang-up first half hour.
Exactly. Really always been famous or infamous for the cronyism.
Yes.
Without a doubt. Perhaps American, or at least the American government in general, you know, also. But I had two things really on my mind today. And are you there?
I'm here. Go right ahead.
Okay. GW. You know, the shadow government. GW. Just justices. Then his dad appoint two justices. Thomas and was it?
Paul, I'm going to have to add, there is something, I don't know if people are hearing it over the air or not, but in my earphones and the producer's earphones, you are echoing when you're talking. And so what we're going to have to ask you to do, if you don't mind, is give us a call immediately back at 864-244-9904. That's 864-244-9904. And for some reason, our phone conversation is not, at least I can't hear you and understand what you're saying real well.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, okay? 864. What's the number? 244-9904. Echoing off.
Go right ahead, and we'll put you on hold. In fact, if you don't mind, call back. We got 1 minute before the break comes up, and we'll put you on right when the break. We'll get you right there, so we have plenty of time to talk. All right.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Okay, it will be a short step from torturing. So I was talking about the attorney-client privilege, another great achievement in this Lynn Stewart case. The attorney for a terrorist, Stewart, represented her client in ways disapproved by prosecutors. Stewart was indicted, tried, and convicted of providing material to support terrorists. Stewart's indictment sends a message to attorneys to not represent too dutifully and aggressively clients who are unpopular or demonized. Initially, this category may be limited to terrorists. However, once the attorney-client privilege is breached, any attorney who gets too much in the way of a prosecutor's case may experience retribution. So anyway, we're very concerned here, and Paul Craig Roberts concludes his article by saying this. Those protective features which are being removed by zealotry in the war against terrorism. The damage terrorists can inflict pales by comparison to the loss of civil liberties that protect us from the arbitrary power of law used as a weapon. The loss of law as Blackstone's shield of the innocent would be catastrophic. It would mean the end of America as the land of liberty. And what a great way to end this first half hour of Christian Worldview. You're listening to Christian Worldview. We'll be back in just a minute with caller Paul on the line, so stay tuned.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us today. Exciting show. Lots of interesting things to talk about. We have a caller on the line, but we're not going to go there quite yet. We want to just quickly get the weather in for the top half hour for those of you making your way out to work.
Okay, in Goomis Spartanburg, 65 degrees. Also downtown, 65. Anderson, 67. Also Clemson, 65. Today, cloudy. Patchy drizzle with areas of fog this morning. Highs in the lower 70s. North winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Nikita Khrushchev. Thank you. Politicians are the same all over. They promise to build a bridge where there is no river.
Yes, indeed. I'll tell you what, it shows your age when you have to tell people who Nikita Khrushchev is. For most people, growing up in my generation, we all knew he was, and Brezhnev and some of these other guys, but nowadays these young folks, especially these homeschooled ones, haven't had to deal on a daily basis with threats from the Soviet Union. That's because it fell apart. But at any rate, Paul's on the line. Welcome to the show, Paul. Sorry about the inconvenience before with that phone line.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, okay. Go right ahead.
Well, look, I had two things on my mind this morning about GW's appointing two justices and his George the First appointing two justices, and I was just wondering if you thought that was coincidence or just some other shadow government type orchestration.
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, you're saying that it goes beyond cronyism. You think that George W. Bush is being fed orders directly from above somewhere, and who to appoint and whatnot.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any doubt. I mean, Bush is not that intelligent of a character, is he?
So he certainly doesn't seem that way.
Yeah. I mean, either he's really smart and is fooling all of us by the whole dope the dope kind of. his look and his actions, or he's just Dick Cheney's in charge, or someone else is in charge, and just telling him who to appoint and whatnot. It is really strange that he's got even Harriet Myers on his staff in some ways. I mean, where did she come from? There's all sorts of bizarre reports going on the internet around about her now, her lesbianism and things. I don't know if they're substantiated or substantiable at all, but she's apparently quite a strange. And obscure character, obviously, herself. But it could well be, Paul, you may be right. This may be an inside job. Someone may be telling George Bush who to appoint.
It's the only thing that makes sense, isn't that the Sherlock Holmes scenario? You whittle away all the other explanations, and what's left, got to be the answer to the mystery.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, of course, you could be looking at it as this is just a real dopey guy, and he's sitting there thinking to himself one night in bed, now who should I appoint for Supreme Court justice? And he thinks to himself, my advisors tell me I got to get somebody that can pass the confirmation hearings. I can't have much of a track record. And I just ate lunch with John Roberts the other day, my kids were playing in school with his kids. I bet he'd be a good choice. And then, who should I appoint next? Boy, this is really getting hard. I don't really know anybody else over here. Maybe we could, I wonder if Harriet'd be willing to do it. She'd been a good friend of mine, and she might even like that. It might be a good birthday present for her. I don't know. I mean, it could be something as stupid as that, I suppose. But
I don't think so. I think that's part of the cover, the government's cover. They act,
yeah.
They act like they don't know what they're doing, or that a big bureaucracy, you have problems of delegating the official policy from the top down. But I think that's their cover. I think they're brutally efficient in all the nasty things they've done throughout history, whether it's, from the very beginning, taking property from the Indians and enslaving people of color, and taking it, letting corporations take advantage of the immigrants. Just from the get go, they act like it's a big mistake, or the contractors are doing something that the government doesn't want. But it's, I think it's just brutally efficient. They and their cover is you know, is government inefficiency. And
well,
I'm not buying it anymore.
Yeah, it makes more sense to me. I mean, the whole facade or the whole aura surrounding somebody like Caligula, you know, in the Roman Empire, a guy who is just so given over to lasciviousness and his own lusts and passions and so forth, and that he's kind of oblivious to what's really happening in the empire. That he's just this this monster of a ruler that just does things out of sort of these whims that come to him from biological urges or whatever.
Makes sense.
You could see George Bush that way, but I have a hard time believing it because the president. And this country is a very powerful figure, and it makes more sense to me to believe that there's someone behind the scenes pulling the strings for this guy and not only getting him elected, but counseling him and coaching him on where he should be, you know, what he should be doing with these appointments. So I have an easier time believing the conspiracy theory than I do the guy's just a dumb thug, you know, a dumb guy embroiled in bureaucracy in Washington.
He's a hapless idiot going along. Yeah, I agree. And even Nero, how many, you know, and let's not give the bureaucrats, you know, let's put some blame on them. But how many, I wonder how many buildings Nero torched personally.
Yeah.
You know, he sent his officials, you know, maybe Homeland Security or whatever, you know, the equivalent was at the time.
Right.
You know, and let's not, you know, just for a paycheck, they're violating other people's rights. So, you know, whoever bureaucrats out there think what you're doing.
Well, this is what states do. States have been the enemy of the church, the enemy of Christ, the enemy of liberty. It's been the enemy of liberty from, you know, time immemorial. And George Bush is just doing more and more of the same. This business about cronyism and then suspending his apparent thought that we can suspend the writ of habeas corpus like Lincoln thought is just appalling. And it's more of the same kind of stuff for him. The same garbage that he's been spewing forth is getting spewed forth again as we're losing more liberty.
Exactly. And then he just mentioned that he's going to, that if people weren't willing to get the next round of vaccines, that he was going to, you know, do it forcibly or violate, you know, somehow incarcerate or, you know, the people who for religious objections or health objections don't want to take this this latest flu predicted flu epidemic.
Huh. I hadn't heard that. That's a surprise to me.
Yeah. He was a day or two ago. I had a house visitor, and he was. We were talking about it exactly. Didn't get a lot of play in the mainstream media, but he was thinking that, you know, if people aren't willing to do their civic duty and get vaccinated for the good of their neighbors, that you know, maybe the state should step in and enforce vaccination.
My terror.
Can you imagine that?
Government terror in the United States. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, there's a lot of things going on.
It sure is.
Without a doubt.
Well, did you have another topic you wanted to cover too?
Well, I had stumbled into an interview by a fellow named Noam Chomsky, I believe.
Chomsky.
Yeah, Chomsky, MIT professor, and I was just, and he seemed to be talking about corporations control the media and how many, you know, you get a certain. I think the title of the speech was Intellectual Self-Defense, to teach people to look through the smoke screen and see who's, you know, for what benefit or to whose benefit situations are being orchestrated to.
Yeah, we want to hold Noam Chomsky with a loose hand because, of course, being well-renowned as a Marxist.
Exactly. He just has socialist tendencies, but...
Yeah,
and you should discount many things he says because of it, but he's still
right.
Like
one of our producers says, every once in a while, even a blind hog finds an acorn.
Exactly.
That's what we have to hold him with a loose hand because Marxists are diabolical. They will go out of their way to use the truth to subvert us even worse than we are. They want more than the totalitarian tendencies of George Bush. They really want a new world order based on Marxism, which would even be worse than what we've got now. So we have to be very careful with old Noam Chomsky.
So you're saying it's more pressure from above and below to get a predictable or a outcome that they're looking for.
Well, if the New World Order can't get you directly with George Bush's policies and the way he acts, and if you see people are going to get wise to it, I mean, people send the same criticism about Alex Jones, by the way, because he picks on corporations. The next thing he's going to do is say, look, okay, let's call it what it is. You see him for what he is, but let's make him out to be a demon and why we need to have even more leftist policy involved so that the people who are starting to oppose George Bush go on the leftist bandwagon of the New World Order rather than fitting into George Bush's plan. Because George Bush has done a remarkable job of trapping evangelicals and others into his program who really don't realize just how bad this guy is.
Exactly.
And Noam Chomsky is just going to pick up some of the folks who figure it out, but you know, they don't want those guys to jump ship, so they push them over to these lefties like Chomsky. So he's another one in their camp, as far as I'm concerned.
Very good, very good. Like I said, you can, again, as you listen to him, he says a lot of interesting things.
Yep.
But he also has that socialist, like the Marxist viewpoint. If you're not economically free, you're not free. Period.
Right.
And the more money that more money, always more money to the welfare state.
Sure.
But it's always interesting. You got to hear the enemy, though, don't you?
You sure do. It's nothing wrong with listening, that's for sure. We just be careful with it.
Very good.
Well, appreciate the call, Paul. We're coming up to a break here, so we hope to call back again soon. And always, it's great talking with you.
Well, it's great talking to you all. And I heard that you were going to be involved in the Freedom Conference in Atlanta. Maybe I can see you there.
Yeah, you sure can. I'll be speaking down there on, I think it was the 15th of November in Atlanta, and one of the key speakers at the Freedom Rally.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us this morning, and we'll be back after just a minute.
Question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Here's an article from Marxism to Neoconservatism. That's right, from Marxism to Neoconservatism. Hi, all. The latest issue of the American Conservative features William Lynn's review of Gottfried's book on Neo-Marxism. Neo-Marxism. The review traces cultural revolution through affirmative action and multiculturalism
as well as to most recent pernicious offspring, neoconservatism. The neoconservatives and neocons have captured the leadership of the National Republican Party and driven it exorably towards preemptive war, as documented in other issues of the American Conservative. Dead but not gone, the strange death of Marxism, Paul Gottfried, University of Missouri Press. And this is the review by William Lind. It sometimes happens that the worst characteristic of an otherwise valuable book is its title. Such is the case with Paul Gottfried's latest work, The Strange Death of Marxism. Instead of Marxism's obituary, what Gottfried has actually written is a story of its transmutation into exactly what remains in dispute. Whatever it might be, it best be called, it is clearly the basis for political correctness and multiculturalism that have become the state ideology in most of Europe and the United States. Along the way, Gottfried does chronicle the death of classical economic Marxism-Leninism, both in and beyond European communist parties. There are no surprises here. Post-war revelations of Stalinist horrors, coupled with a rising prosperity that enabled European workers to join the middle class, undermined the powerful French and Italian communist parties of the 1950s, along with those in most other countries. Maoist and Castroite attempts to internationalize the workers' revolution by translating it into a third-world liberation kept Marxism-Leninism on life support for a while, but it has already been dead. It is already brain dead. By the time the Soviet Union fell in 1989, classical Marxism had long since been stuffed and mounted like Lenin. Not even the Chinese Communist Party takes it seriously anymore. Were that the main substance of Gottfried's book, it would amount to little more than the usual ho-hum academic work. In fact, it is very much more. What Gottfried really presents is the history of Marxism's bastard offspring, political correctness, and the institution most responsible for its birth, the Frankfurt School. In so doing, The Strange Death of Marxism joins Lorenzo's superb new biography of Theodore Adorno in making the intellectual history of the most radical anti-Western ideologies accessible to non-academic audiences. Gottfried traces the rise of political correctness and multiculturalism through Antonio Gramsci, George Lukacs, and the Frankfurt School and others, showing how Marx's economic determinism evolved into an obsession with the unholy trinity of racism, sexism, and homophobia, with that which now demands endless sacrifices. The first way station was what Gottfried calls neo-Marxism. Neo-Marxists call themselves without accepting all of Marx's historical and economic theory, while upholding socialism against capitalism as a moral position. Thereafter, socialists would build their conceptual fabrics on Marx's notion of alienation extracted from his writings of the 1840s. They could, therefore, dispense with a strictly materialistic analysis of shift, focus toward religion, morality, and aesthetics. What happened next is a matter of dispute over terminology than anything else, as Marxism became politically correct and political correctness and multiculturalism. Did it turn into cultural as distinguished from economic Marxism, or did it, as Gottfried contends, move so far beyond Marx as to constitute post-Marxism? Gottfried thinks it did. Here Gottfried is both right and wrong. He is correct that cultural Marxism, we know as political correctness, has Marxism-Leninism as an orthodox Marxist and orthodox Marxist economics behind. It did so early, by the late 1910s, that Gramsci and Lukacs perceived that culture was not merely superstructure, but a separate and important variable. And in 1930, Max Horkheimer, the Frankfurt School's new director, said that the working class would not be the basis of a revolution. But Gottfried writes, in defense of this project as a Marxist one, it might be said that its practitioners regarded themselves as revolutionary disciples of Marx, took pains to place their work into a Marxist framework. Perhaps we should simply take them at their word. So here we see this revolution, basically through the Frankfurt School and through these philosophers, to distort what later became the neoconservatives, what become neoconservatives, into imbibing a Marxist ideology that has dramatically affected the world. Now, it's not pure historic Marxism. It's a modified or evolved Marxism. But that's the kind of stuff that George W. Bush and his cronies push. And you think I'm crazy on this? Simply go read how he's spreading democracy in Iraq. What is in the Iraqi Bill of Rights and the Constitution? What is it that George Bush does? Don't look at what he says. What does he do? Look at the Patriot Act. Take a look at his big government programs, his payoffs to not only cronies through appointments, political appointments, but also through monopoly privileges, through higher prices on certain industries that are caused by government bungling that allow people to gain more profits. What is George Bush really doing that's that much different than what many Marxists would want to do? Well, he's not going as far, certainly, as pure Marxist. We know that. He's not he's not smart enough to be a Marxist in the first place. Not that Marxists are, it is a doctrine that's entirely intelligent in some respects. But those people that are Marxists, let's face it, the people on the left are not dummies in general. They're smart people with a bad ideology. George Bush probably doesn't qualify as that, and he may have somebody behind the scenes pulling the strings. But what we see with George Bush is many of the policies that he's promoting, whether it be the suspension of habeas corpus, whether it be helping his cronies, whether it be restricting the liberties that people would have under the Bill of Rights, these things are Marxian ideals. His promotion, George Bush has done nothing to stop the promotion of public schooling, of foreign interventionism, and he likes aggressive warfare. These are Marxian ideas and principles. He is trying to do an end run, folks, in bringing in, according to this review, bring in those old Marxian principles through the political process and start by calling them conservative principles. He's a conservative president, supposedly, and guess what he's bringing to us through the back door? The same thing that the Marxists would have brought in some time ago. So, at any rate, interesting article, I think, about the influences of Marxists or neo-Marxists in the neoconservative movement, and, of course, how it's affecting George Bush as well as the other Republicans. Interesting stuff. Well, let's shift gears for a minute here. Here's America's Crisis of Fidelity. This is by David Black. Now, we like Dave Black online. If one day we're going to have him on the shows, and this was sent to us by the Confederate group Gray Echoes. America has entered the greatest crisis in her history. Something has gone desperately wrong. Something is broken. Something has to be fixed. Where can we turn for a spark of optimism and a ray of sunshine? We cannot turn to science. Science can instruct us on how to walk on the moon, but it cannot tell us how to walk on Earth. The major concern of modern science is how to stay alive, rather than how to live. No, nor can we turn to politics. Heads of states make inspirational speeches and produce solemn documents that confer at world summits. But their agreements are worthless scraps of paper, and their peace proposals are useless museum pieces. Politics can never be the answer because it foolishly tries to carve a lasting brotherhood out of a rotten wood of unregenerate humanity. Religion, likewise, holds no hope for us. America is full of baptized pagans. Not even Christianity is the answer, if by Christianity we mean churchianity, a kind of politically correct American denominational Christian light, if you will. The rich young ruler of Luke 18:22 was probably a good old boy with a fine record, but he lacked one thing: eternal life. He needed to forsake his worldly moorings and burn his bridges behind him completely. In short, he needed to be completely sold out to Jesus. Sell all that thou hast, Jesus says. Many Americans are like that rich young ruler. They regularly attend church, sit politely in their pews, and go through the motions of singing hymns and choruses, but their fingers are crossed. They have no intention of selling out to the Lord who bought them. To them, religion is a good thing, but they will not be known for their radicalism. No, sir, by golly, a calm moderation is what we need today. Such people make absolutely no impact in today's world. The reason, says Paul in Romans 12, 1 through 2, is that they allow themselves to be conformed to the thought patterns of the present age. The world system has squeezed them into this mold. The question Paul wishes to ask is this: are you willing to be sanctified in turn? A term that simply means being changed from the inside out. Sanctification is a revolutionary process. It affects the very center of our consciousness. It is not a second blessing, but a constant renewal. It is nothing other than a restoration of the divine image, imago Dei, that is marred but not lost at the fall of Adam. Today we confuse sanctification, the total transformation of our thoughts and behavior, with modern day fads or practical mysticism. We plod along with an occasional prayer for guidance, but having the mind of Christ means practically nothing in our daily experience. Stagnation, complacency, status quo thinking, all these characterize our lives. And isn't it so? He's done a great job here, I think, in pointing out some grievous trends in the American Christian community and how they've just kowtowed and gone right along line with the New World Order, with whoever it is, the globalists, the Bushites, or whoever it is that's leading us away from liberty and the Founding Fathers. He concludes his article simply by saying this: America is a crisis of fidelity, and the answer to a crisis of fidelity is fidelity, a deeper trust in God, a more thorough conviction of our position in Christ. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free, and return to the clear teachings of the Word of God. The answer to the present crisis will not be found in Christianity light. It will only be found in classic Christianity, Christianity with the courage to be countercultural, a Christianity that has reclaimed the wisdom of the past in order to face the corruptions of the present and create a renewed future, a Christianity that risks the high adventure of fidelity. Scripture teaches us that Christian life is not a vacation, but a vocation. We are participants, not spectators. It is a scandal for a man to be entertained when he should be enlisted. When God moves, we must rise to meet him. And we appreciate Dave Black's commentary, because that's just right on the money. Really good stuff there from Dave Black. And this is the Christian Worldview Show, after all, and we want to encourage people to hold dearly to the Christian worldview and not accept so many pagan notions and practices. How many Christians are involved with the evils of their age? Not only the evils of the, you know, that you find in pornography, or the evils that you find in romance novels, or the evils that are found in the media in general, but what about theft? People involved with using the welfare state to rob and plunder other citizens. This is a terrible thing, and it's a tragedy that we've come up against in America, that Christians have imbibed so much sin. We're no better than the Corinthians, and Dave Black has done a great job of pointing this out to, I think, a wide audience here. Well, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've come to the bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
There is a place for government in the affairs of men, and our Declaration of Independence tells us precisely what that is. The role of government is to protect individuals in their God-given individual rights. Freedom is the natural birthright of man, but all that government can do in behalf of freedom is to let the individual alone, and it should secure him his rights by making others let him alone. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 142.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Let's have a quick look at the weather if we get a chance here, because I know some of you are still making your way out this morning. Wanted to give you the heads up on what to expect.
Yes, we do. In Greenville, Spartanburg, 64 degrees. Downtown, 65. Anderson, 67. Clemson, 65. Today, cloudy, patchy drizzle with areas of fog this morning. Highs in the lower 70s and north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here's a funny little quote on gun control. If guns are outlawed, can we use swords?
I don't know. Can we? Be interesting. We could. Bring everybody, sheath a sword. Walk around with a sword on them. I don't know how to use a sword. I imagine most of you don't either. You know, if we were born 300 years ago, all of us would be very proficient to some extent in using swords. But I wouldn't even know what to do with one thing. I do prefer just putting the cartridges in the chamber or the clip and just carrying that thing around and being able to just pop off a few of those pretty easily. Far more effective than swords too. You don't have to get that close to people and you don't have to wipe off the blade or anything like that. So anyway. Other whole topic. Well, I've had a number of interesting stories come in. I'll have to peruse through these things, or maybe cruise through them during our last half hour here. If we have a caller, by all means, do give us a call and to talk about some of these issues. The only thing really happening in the news is they're already starting to talk about Condoleezza Rice versus Hillary. It's right on the front page of Fox News. This is something we talked about months ago. Who the Republicans going to run? Probably Condoleezza Rice. I'm sure we have a woman president. So her versus Hillary, who do you think is going to win? And people are thinking that Hillary is going to win in general. Well, anyway, Iraq market massacre. Car bomber drives into Tal Afsar Bazaar and kills 30, wounds 45. 1,400 others die in Baghdad attacks. So the terror still continues in Baghdad. Sad. That just popped up on Fox News as well. I hope somebody's keeping account of those. I'm not, but I know it all adds up. You have 14 here and 40 there and 100 here and 60 there and 15 there. You know, all before long, you get a very sizable number of people who are dead. Well, we have Charlie Reese writing in his column this week, just summarizing what he has to say, is the poor do it for themselves. People are complaining that it's, accidents, illnesses, layoffs, things like that you can't control are causing us causing poor people to be poor. In effect, however, it's not. But Charlie Reese says it's not. It's the poor people's fault that they're poor in general. Not always the case, but the ideas of having accidents, illnesses, layoffs, and things like that are really the exception, not the rule. At any rate, what we're looking at as far as Charlie Reese is concerned, why we have poor people, is because they develop drug or alcohol addictions. That's one. Because they fail to educate themselves. Now, and he even thinks you could go to a government school and pick up a few books here and there, a PhD's book off the shelf, and learn something. People don't do that. Other people are poor because they never develop good work habits or even good grooming. You can imagine this. I mean, some people even go to job interviews with unkempt hair and smelly. Can you imagine what kind of job they're going to get? I guess if you're going to a garbage company, it's not too bad. That's about the only place you get a job. Maybe not even there. And some people are poor because they never learn how to handle money, he says. He says anyone with average intelligence can achieve some level of success in this country still if you just come up with some product. I once knew of a person who became a multimillionaire simply by inventing a very simple chemical, patenting a very simple chemical that would preserve gold in the school class rings from tarnishing as fast. And in order to get his millions, all he had to do was sit in his garage, he and his wife, with tweezers and dip class rings into the solution, put them on a piece of paper to dry, and ship them back. And he made millions and millions. Amazing things you can do in this country. So Charlie Reese is right. People aren't poor because of accidents or because some oppression has befallen them. They're poor because of their own doings, their own bad doings for the most part. He makes a good point. Ann Coulter, writing in, Ed sent this article in to us. She writes in, This is what advice and consent means. This is actually a few days old. She says, I eagerly await the announcement of President Bush's real nominee to the Supreme Court. If the president meant Harriet Meyer seriously, I have to assume Bush wants to go back to Crawford and let Dick Cheney run the country. ultimately, how do you know he already doesn't run the country? Anyway, unfortunately for Bush, he could nominate his Scottish Terrier, Barney, and some conservatives would rush to defend him, claiming to be in possession of secret information, convincing them that the pooch is a true conservative, and listing Barney's many virtues, loyalty, courage, never jumps on the furniture, etc. Harriet Myers went to Southern Methodist University Law School, which is not ranked at all by the serious law school reports, and ranked number 52 by U.S. News and World Report. Her greatest legal accomplishment is being the first woman commissioner of the Texas Lottery. I know conservatives have been trained to hate people who went to elite universities, and generally that's good rule of thumb, but not when it comes to the Supreme Court. First, Bush has no... I'm not sure about that. But anyway, first, Bush has no right to say, trust me. He was elected to represent the American people, not to be a dictator for 8 years. Among the coalitions that elected Bush are people who have been laboring in the trenches for a quarter century to change the legal order in America. While Bush is still boozing it up in the early 1980s, Ed Meese, Anton Scalia, Robert Bork, and all the founders of the Federalist Society began creating a farm team of massive legal talent on the right to casually spurn people who have been taking slings and arrows all these years and instead reward the former commissioner of the Texas Lottery with a Supreme Court appointment is like pinning a Medal of Honor on some flunky paper pusher with a desk job at the Pentagon or on John Kerry while ignoring your infantrymen doing the fighting and dying. Second, even if you take seriously William F. Buckley's line about preferring to be governed by the first 200 names in the Boston telephone book than by a Harvard faculty of the Supreme Court is not supposed to govern us. Being a Supreme Court justice ought to be a mind-numbingly tedious job suitable only for super nerds trained at legal reasoning like John Roberts. Oh, please. She's not sold out to John Roberts, is apparently so. Being on the Supreme Court isn't like winning a Best Employee of the Month award. It's a real job. You'd think that she would be able to figure it out. If he's, you know, a month after, you know, appointing John Roberts, he's now going for Harriet Myers, you'd think that there wouldn't be like a vast chasm between the two. You'd think she'd realize that both of these two have some other agenda or have some other purpose in being appointed than what just meets the eye, and they're not that far distant. Just because he has credentials and she doesn't is really irrelevant in all this. I think there must be something more sinister going on behind the scenes here. Anyway, one website defending Bush's choice of a graduate from an undistinguished law school complains that Myers' critics are playing the Democrats' game, claiming the GOP is not the party which idolizes Ivy League acceptability as a criterion of intellectual and mental fitness. It's a sort of error that results from trying to sound my Ivy League rather than being clear. It's that sentence uses grammatically incorrect, which is which instead of that web whatever. She's going on here a little bit about stuff that is boring, so I'm going to skip that point. Anyway, here we have Ann Coulter, who is a conservative, dissenting from George Bush, as we're not surprised. In her last two paragraphs, she says this: conservatives from elite schools have already been subjected to liberal blandishments and haven't blinked. There are right-wingers who have fought off the best and the brightest the blue states have to offer. The New York Times isn't going to mow them as it does intellectual lightweights like Jim Jeffords and Lincoln Chafee by dangling fawning profiles before them. They aren't waiting for a pat on the head from Nina Totenberg or Linda Greenhouse. To paraphrase Archie Bunker, when you find a conservative from an elite law school, you've really got something. However nice, helpful, prompt, and tidy she is, Harriet Myers isn't qualified to play a Supreme Court justice on the West Wing, let alone to be a real one. Both Republicans and Democrats should be alarmed that Bush seems to believe his power to appoint a judge is absolute. This is what advice and consent means. In other words, don't confirm her. This is ridiculous. And the quotation earlier from Alexander Hamilton was just fabulous. I'm going to read it again because we read this earlier in the show, and maybe we've had some people who just joined us that didn't hear Randy Barnett, the senior Cato Institute fellow, who pointed out from Federalist number 76 the following from Alexander Hamilton. Think of Harriet Myers when you're listening to this quotation, folks. To what purpose, then, require the cooperation of the Senate? I answer that the necessity of their concurrence would have a powerful, though in general silent, operation. It would be an excellent check upon a spirit of favoritism in the President, and would tend greatly to prevent the appointment of unfit characters from state prejudice, from family connection, from personal attachment, or from a view to popularity. He would be both ashamed and afraid to bring forward for the most distinguished or lucrative stations candidates who had no other merit than that of coming from the same state to which he particularly belonged, or of being in some way or other personally allied to him, or of possessing the necessary insignificance and pliancy to render them obsequious instruments of his pleasure. There you got Harriet Myers all summed up by Alexander Hamilton. Good stuff. Appreciate them sending that in. Okay, and here we have the Associated Press. Papers, please. President Bush, stirring debate on the worrisome possibility of a bird flu pandemic, suggested dispatching American troops to enforce quarantines in any areas where outbreaks of the killer virus. The translation of this martial law in the United States, Dr. Irwin Redler said. Okay, so there's something else to be on the lookout for. Caller Paul mentioned that he was going to force people to be vaccinated. Maybe so, and here he's talking about quarantining people on this bird flu. Where does bird flu even come from? Some people think that the American government's sort of been controlling the bird flu. I don't know if I'd go that far. I just don't know. Maybe it's true. I wouldn't put anything past George Bush, that's for sure, or any of these other Republicans, but won't jump into that nest quite yet. New Orleans state authorities are investigating allegations that New Orleans police officers broke into a dealership and made off with nearly 200 cars, including 41 new Cadillacs, as Hurricane Katrina closed in. It's a very, very active investigation, Chris Wartell, spokesman for the Louisiana Attorney General, said. Friday, we expect developments quickly. Wartell would not comment on why the officers might have taken the cars or whether they were using the line of duty. Give me a break. You're going to take 41 Cadillacs and use them in the line of duty? This is called police officers stealing cars. Come on, lady. You can't be this doltish, can you? But the cars may have been taken even before the hurricane roared into a town on August 29th, according to the president and general manager of the dealership, Doug Steeds. Steeds said the cars included 88... Oh, this is funny. It was 88 used new Cadillacs and Chevrolets, 40 used cars, 52 customers' cars, and a restored 1970 El Camino and a 1966 Impala. We put the loss on the new cars at $3.7 million, Stade said. The used cars ran another $900,000. When reports surfaced last month that officers may have taken the cars, New Orleans Police Superintendent Warren Riley said it was not considering looting because the officers patrolled in the cars. They needed some patrol cars. There's all their cars broke down, so they all had to cruise over to the dealership and just grab some new cars. Give me a break. You want to talk about corruption? This is why you can't always even trust the police, folks. Did you know that? You can't always trust the police. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back for our last segment in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
As long as the state, the agency of coercion, stands over society offering to dispense economic privilege to those who pay it homage, conferring an advantage on some men at the expense of other men, the misuse of political power should be the first line of attack for the moralist. It is inevitable that political privilege will be used in this way if it is available and begging to be used. No people has ever resisted it who have been led into this temptation. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in the Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 84.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg, and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Thanks for listening this morning. Hope we're helping you think a little bit differently and a little bit more deeply than you would if by listening to other talk shows in the morning, or in any time during the day for that matter. I want to make a quick plug for the Times Examiner. The Times Examiner is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State, supporting pro-life libertarian as well as constitutionalist authors, among others. You can get a copy of the Times Examiner sent directly to your home for just $25 a year or $27 a year if you live out of state. The phone number to call is 268-0576, 268-0576. To place an ad in the Times Examiner, we hope you'll do so, help the paper and help your business. You can call David directly at 864-859-6817. That's 864-859-6817. Remember that we have a need for volunteers at the Tyranny Response Network. If you're able to help with radio signals, transmission on the computer, or if you're able to help with even producing the Christian Worldview show temporarily or on a substitute basis, we'd be glad to hear from you. Go to tyrannyresponse.com when the page starts working again, and click on the Contacts tab, and when you do so, you'll be able to scroll down to anybody's email address name there. Just click on one and send them a note. We'll be happy to hear from you and put you to good work. You can also check out under the Related Media tab the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition. If you scroll down under Related Media, you'll come to the bottom there and see the link for South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition to save your private property. Tell the state that you believe at the and want the state to affirm and declare that all rights are not granted by the states to right life, liberty, and property, but are antecedent to the state, and indeed the state is there to protect those rights where government is, and the state should not be interfering with those rights. At any rate, if you can, please do so. You'll be glad you did, and it'll help in just a little bit in the fight for liberty. Well, is there an adult in the House? Alas, Bush naps. On spending, the Republican Congress routinely exhibits the maturity and self-restraint of infants screaming for their pacifiers. Tom DeLay, House Speaker Dennis Hastert, Republican from Illinois, and Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, Republican from Tennessee, are spending money at the pace that eclipses Democratic Congresses. And maddeningly, President Bush recoils from his veto pen like a vampire running from garlic. A dash of adult supervision could restrain his party's juvenile delinquency, but alas, Bush naps upstairs while the kids trash the living room. That's what columnist DeRoy Murdoch says, and yes, you know, Bush doesn't veto anything. He likes spending. He likes big government. Madam Speaker, in the 1950s, Republicans were sent to Washington to shrink the government and reduce taxes. Why, when they didn't, Democrats got a second wind. Republicans in Congress today were elected to tame the great society and to roll back the power of the liberal interest groups. If they're seen as committing the greatest expansion of government since LBJ, don't be surprised if Mrs. Nancy Pelosi is soon calling herself Madam Speaker, Brendan Minter said on the Political Diary of 9/23/05. You have to forgive my ignorance. I don't know who Nancy Pelosi is, and I probably should, but I don't. So someone call and enlighten me. But at any rate, that neocon, whoever it is, will become Speaker, or maybe worse than a neocon. Is there anything really worse than a neocon? You'd almost rather have somebody come out and say they're a Marxist and run the country, in some ways, because then there wouldn't be all this smoke and mirrors, a charade, and the evangelical left or right would not be as deceived into complying with these folks. But at any rate, such as it is, this is the world we live in. Well, then we have from Murray Rothbard a couple of quotations. We like Murray Rothbard, even though he did not hold to the Christian worldview. much of what he had to say was very congruent with the Christian worldview, especially when it came to economics. Didn't on philosophy, have to admit that, for sure. But that's why we have Stephen Yates to be our Christian worldview philosopher, right? And we can also listen to the Tyranny Response Network and get your fill of the truth from a Christian worldview perspective, rather than having to turn to these other places for that part of information. But as far as economics go, and as far as his theory of public policy goes about the state, he's right on the money. Here's something that the Tyranny Response Network staff have sent up to me from Murray Rothbard. The last great political grasp of the isolationist old right came in the struggle for the Bricker Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The amendment was designed to prevent national treaties or executive agreements from becoming the supreme law of the land, overriding previous internal law provisions from the Constitution. The Bricker Amendment was backed by conservative groups from the National Economic Council and the Committee for Constitutional Government to the Chamber of Commerce and the American Farm Bureau Federation, and by such writers as Frank Chodorov, an editor of Human Events, Garrett Garrett, and former Representative Samuel Pettingill. It was opposed by a coalition of liberals, and the new Eisenhower administration was sent it down to defeat in the Senate in February. And that was in 1954. Something about the end of the old isolationist right that Murray Rothbard is writing about. He also says the following: the new right was led by William F. Buckley and National Review, which from its establishment in 1955 immediately took charge of the American right wing. Its wit, professionalism, and personal and financial resources were new on the conservative scene and had had no real journalistic rival. With the departure of isolationists Chodorov and Felix Morley, moreover, Human Events now became a staunch supporter of the new right and of the Cold War. National Review publisher William A. Rusher immediately proceeded to capture the nation's young Republicans for the new conservatism, and Buckley presided over the creation of a young political action arm. The Young Americans for Freedom, as well as the Conservative Party of New York, moreover, the Buckley forces brought to the fore of right-wing leadership in the Republican Party two internationalists, Senators Barry Goldwater, who had been an Eisenhower delegate at the 1952 convention, and William F. Noland, who had been a follower of Earl Warren in California and who had voted against the Bricker Amendment. National Review also brought into the intellectual leadership of the right wing a new coalition of traditionalist Catholics and ex-communists and ex-radicals whose major concern was the destruction of the God that had failed them, the Soviet Union and the world communism. This change in focus from isolationism to global anti-communism had been aided in its early years by the advent of Senator Joseph McCarthy, with whom Buckley had been allied. Therefore, before he launched his crusade, incidentally, McCarthy had not been considered a right-winger, but rather a middle of the road on domestic questions and an internationalist on foreign affairs. But by 1960, the advent of the Goldwater movement, the swift transformation of the American right had been completed. The right wing was now what we are familiar with today. For the remnant of libertarians and isolationists remaining, it was once again time to look elsewhere for allies. And that's why the Libertarian Party began in the early 1970s. Not because they were a bunch of druggies that wanted to take drugs, as much as it was that they were trying to recapture the vision of the principles of the Founding Fathers and the isolationism, if you want to call it, of the true old right-wing Republicans. That's what they were after, and that's what they tried to garner and capture. Okay, and our final story for the day, we have adding economic insult to injury, Katrina. Just a quotation, not a story, from Stephen Moore in Political Diary of 9/23, or September 23rd, 2005. Aiding economic insult to injury to Katrina, the combination of a wildly spendthrift Congress and the possibility of higher taxes ahead has contributed to the bearish environment on Wall Street. Congress's political wrecking ball could do more structural damage to the economy than all the wreckage from the hurricane's ill winds. And that's very true. I'll tell you what, though. Wall Street's a complicated thing, folks, and being in financial planning is my bread and butter business for what I support all my volunteer efforts with. I'll tell you this much, and I've been in the business for 15, 17 years, I guess, on and off. When I was down in South America, I was not in the business, so there's several years of pause there and with my business. But at any rate, there are many people who gain from leftist intervention, from meddling in the economy, from monopoly grants of power, from cronyism. So stocks don't generally decline necessarily when you have cronyism or these kind of distortions caused by the Republican Party or George Bush or anybody else. Some stocks may really go up. I mean, if you owned energy stocks, except for the last week, if you've owned energy stocks in the last year, you've done very well. If you've owned gold stocks, you've done very well. So some people, do well from these from certain political manipulations. Other people don't. Other people really suffer. And if there's enough of those companies that suffer, yeah, you could have a general decline in the stock market. Technology firms are really suffering right now, it seems, on many fronts. But if you're in real estate or any other commodities, you've done well in the last year. I think that you need to be watching out, folks, for a bigger crisis ahead. The $8 trillion in debts, somebody's got to eventually come down and say, look, $1.5 billion a day in interest, there's no way we're going to pay this. We can't possibly collect it. This is a farce. It's going to be repudiated. That's the time you want to make sure you have some gold and silver on hand. I'm not talking about just, a couple coins. If you can, get at least that. But, try to budget for your family this year, $3,000 to $5,000 minimum of gold and silver on hand. And also get some brass and lead, guns, bullets, cartridges. Get some of that stuff too. It'll all help. It will retain its value. Get all the debt you can. There's a Christian worldview for you. Why? Because when there's hyperinflation, you're the big winner if you've got lots of debt, because then you can pay it off with a song. Any rate, just some food for thought as we close our show today. We thank you for listening to Christian Worldview. We look forward to another exciting edition tomorrow, Wednesday. So make sure to turn your dial back to one of the stations here in the upstate of South Carolina and listen in for another exciting edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.